Before we get started tonight, I'd like to thank our sponsors, Funky Soul Coffee. That's soul with an S-O-L. It's the brainchild of Michelle Russell and Gavin Butler. These two had a dream, and that was to turn a 1976 Airstream camper into a coffee shop, a 70s-themed coffee shop. And they've succeeded. Michelle Russell has years and years of experience in the coffee industry, and she's come up with some truly delicious 70s-themed concoctions. I've had the privilege of tasting a few of them. You can reach them at 208-447-9044. You can email them at hello@funkysoul.com. And you can find them on Instagram or at www.funkysoulcoffee.com. Give them a try. People often say, history's boring. And they say, slow down. Pull your head out. Think a bit. History is a fundamental building block of civilization, and it's the way we describe our civilizations and the human condition within it. It can be so many different things, just as humans are so many different things. And so it can be fun, and it can be depressing. It can be funny, and it can be boring and dry. It can be many things, and often, whether you enjoy history or not is dependent on those telling the stories, the historians, those presenters of the past. And we think we can take you down the right road. Straight out of Boise, Idaho, we are the Highway to History Podcast. Join us. Thank you to the Trendy Dads out of San Francisco, California, for that wonderful cover of the B-52's Private.
Hello, friends and listeners. I'd like to thank our sponsors, the Avery Hotel and Brasserie. Located in the heart of downtown is Boise's only historic boutique hotel. Meticulously renovated by renowned chef Cal Elliott, the property boasts two unique restaurants, both anchored by 100-plus-year-old Brunswick bars. The Avery Brasserie, with a diverse French-inspired menu, and Tyner's Alley, with a dark and moody English pub vibe with scotch eggs and free pool. I've eaten at both, and let me tell you, they scrumptious. With beautiful soaking tub and balcony rooms and suites overlooking the historic gem block on 10th and Main Streets, you can find modern, elevated comfort and rich history perfect for visiting guests, staycations, and special occasions. And let me tell you, I've gotten my relaxation on in these rooms. Oh, soaking tubs, soaking my feet, eating some treats and drinking some cocktails. And it's historic, baby. Lots of crazy stuff happened in this hotel since its construction back in 1910. Find out more about the Avery at TheAveryBoise.com.
Dude, we're starting a new podcast. You've been doing you've been doing History Unabridged. Isn't that what it's been called?
Yeah.
History Unabridged. And, you know, now you're thinking of transitioning into a different style of...
Right. So I started a podcast with my ex-business partner, Jeff Wade, and we had a good thing going. You know, we'd really do in-depth research on, history topics from Idaho. But it was so much work. Every week to 2 weeks, we're trying to write like a thesis paper worth of history and research. Mm-hmm. And then we would read through these scripts and we would, you know, we would free ball it and talk, you know, here and there. And we got a really, you know, positive reviews. Of course, there's always haters.
Yeah, I know.
You know, like, oh, you didn't say the pioneers were good enough. I'm like, well, they're fucking good and they're bad. Like, it's that simple.
It's both, yeah.
You know, but Jeff and I would try to actually like go against the grain of what people wanted to hear. You know, maybe there always is a group, I think a larger majority that wants to hear unrefined history.
Mm.
They don't want the polished
shit that you get in school.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Now, some of that is true.
Absolutely.
But it has a certain angle on it. Trying to be unbiased is hard.
They sugarcoat it as much as they can.
They sugarcoat it for sure. So then, anyway, when Jeff and I, you know, kind of went our separate ways, what ended up happening is I started doing, you know, my own version of the podcast. I interviewed a buddy of mine about a trip we took to Stibnite Mine, you know, up in Thunder Mountain Mining District, Central Idaho.
That's cool.
And it went really well. And so I started doing these conversations. I did a few of those, and hey, they were getting well received. Then I had this idea, okay, like American history unabridged. But again, I get back to the problem is I'm looking at things that have been left out. A lot of history is kind of edited about what we learn by just what is omitted and left out of what we're taught. And so I started to do that. But again, too much work for a guy that's got to live his life.
Mm.
Then you and I met you before a year ago at the Meridian Night Market.
Yeah, yeah.
And you had been interested in history of the West and stuff, so we had a conversation. And then lo and behold, you know, your sister comes out to take some shots of me at this old mansion thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you come out too. And I'm like, oh, hey, man, it's you.
Yeah.
And we got reintroduced. And so we started talking about, you know, uncensored conversations where we don't have to worry about the PC police or, you know, the far right police or anybody canceling us out. Because in reality, both sides can do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And have.
And they do, yeah.
And they do. And it's just kind of like history isn't meant to be positive. And it's not always overly negative either. Mm-hmm. There are positive aspects to history. And you know what? Even if you disagree with it, fucking cool. We can put our big boy and girl pants on and we can talk about it.
And why do you think people even want history to be one way? It's like history's been corrupt and destructive, and all races, all groups, all religions have hurt people, oppressed people. There's, throughout history, it's been like everybody's been at some point in time, like everybody's been fucked over, but people want it to be this, like, this group's good or this group's on the right side, or they want to sugarcoat it. They want to make it, or even nationalistic.
Oh, right.
Like, it's everything's great about this country or this country.
You see this, you know, like my area of study was, you know, before I PhD'd out, I got 2.5 years into a genocide and Holocaust PhD program.
Mm.
And one thing I can tell you is behind any perpetrator of violence or systematic violence, genocide, whatever,
was pain.
And is a victim, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you get, but we want to forget the past and say, oh no. Or like, you know, we have this idea in America that America has always been exceptional. Mm. American exceptionalism, we are so exceptional. Well, it depends very much on who you are and what your past is there. You know, but America has been very unexceptional if you're not part of the upper class.
True.
Right? And you can have poor white farmers in the Great Depression in the South, and you can have poor black farmers from the South.
Mm.
Now, from what I've studied, both have it tough, but perpetually, poor black farmers had it rougher.
Absolutely.
And there was more discriminatory kind of conduct against them.
Well, and literal laws against them.
Right.
Jim Crow laws and
black
things like that.
Black codes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but it's very easy to say, oh, here's the white impoverished, and they have a lot in common with the black impoverished population, but yet what the owner classes always did is they could press that race button.
Yeah.
And then you get no class consciousness. Mm. Like, you know, so like, you could look at it one way, oh, you know, there was class cohesion. And there were like moments where the poor miners, for instance, in Kentucky would fight the owner class, and there would be class consensus. That's positive history to me.
That's cool.
But then you would get that race button that would be played, and desperate people are going to act desperately. And so that's negative history.
That's what turns people against each
other.
That makes me think of, do you know like Fred Hampton and the Black Panthers?
Oh,
like,
fuck yeah.
Yeah. And like Fred Hampton, I want to say, had this group, I'm going to maybe get the name wrong, but they called like the Rainbow Coalition.
The Rainbow Coalition.
Right.
Yeah, right. And that was,
go ahead, dude. I think I was like, you might know more about it than me, honestly. Like,
right. So exactly what we're talking about, you know, you had largely urban, impoverished black communities.
Mm-hmm.
You had the Panthers.
Yeah.
And they're not a terrorist organization like many want to, you know, paint them as.
Sure.
But then, you know, they were really a food subsidy program, their education, they were protecting their communities because the police weren't doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And in many times, and you can follow the reports, they were being discriminated against and treated violently by the police in Chicago, as Fred Hampton was literally murdered by the police.
Yeah, yeah.
But then in the South, you had a group of white, impoverished Southerners and hardworking
in Appalachian
people.
Appalachian area.
Yeah. And they had Confederate flags on their vests, but Fred Hampton was like, okay, there's some class consciousness going on here. And so he united with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know when it wasn't Fred Hampton, but later on, some of the Panthers that were involved, you know, had said, you know, that Confederate flag on your shirt really offends me. When this one guy that it was in this great PBS documentary on the Rainbow Coalition, at the very end, this Black Panther is dying.
Mm.
And his friend that was in the, you know, Appalachian kind of working class group, he started fighting against the Confederate flag as an emblem of Southern culture.
Oh, wow.
And he was actually, like, he took it off his vest, and by the time he died, like, he was in the room when his friend died.
Wow.
He was holding his hand.
Wow.
Like, that's the power of, like, conversation.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
being able to, like, find common ground. And that's what this podcast is about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, and even, I was just going to say, just the thing we're talking about right now, these are the things, when do you learn about Fred Hampton and the Rainbow Coalition in school?
You don't.
You know, there are movies, like, they came out with, I think they came out with that movie, like, Judas and the Black Messiah.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was all about.
Pretty legit history.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, a lot of the times, that's kind of, I think, what happens is these historical moments get, like, brushed aside, or people kind of don't talk about them or cover them up. Like, even think of, did you see that movie that came out this year, Killers of the Flower Moon? With
right.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What an interesting time in history, but that no one's going to, like, tell you about in middle school or, like, high school social studies. You know what I mean? So
right, because
you have to have a movie made about it, or someone talks about it, and then it, you know,
gets
out there.
If not the, you know, Black population of America, you have the indigenous peoples of America and the various tribes. I think people like to gloss over or generalize Native communities. And it's like, dude, you got all these different tribes in the United States, so many different tribes, and you can't generalize one tribe against another. They're all going to have different experiences. But I think we look at Native American history by and large of them being treated poorly by the white community. And they definitely were, but we overlooked that. Man, there are different angles to look at. And I think what we usually look about at like on the reservations of impoverished, the Sioux, you know, in Pine Ridge Reservation, Sitting Bull's murder, you know, Crazy Horse being killed. We look at like these people in desperate straits fighting against more powerful and rich nation, right?
Yeah.
But I think Killers of the Flower Moon flipped it. In a sense, it's like, no, these, I forget the tribe.
I can't remember either.
But the tribe was, they were the wealthy.
Yeah, they were doing really well. They found all that oil.
Right. And so you have poor white folks in Oklahoma that are begging for charity from the tribe.
Yeah.
And but yet you had the powerful guy in Robert De Niro's character who got in and he feigned friendship.
Yeah, how fucked
while
up.
He's poisoning.
To be the one that was the most trusted white man.
But the only thing I heard about that is in the book, it's from the frame of reference of not Leonardo DiCaprio's character, but from his wife. And they changed it for some reason, maybe to get draw.
I think part of it was like, probably just because it was Martin Scorsese directing. You had a white, you know, New York man like directing this movie. You probably would have had a better, you know, more from the Native American perspective if you had an indigenous director.
Right.
You know?
He did consult with its tribe.
Oh, no. They like, gave the green light. They loved it. But I think even they said, somebody said something about that, like, it should have probably been more focused on the wife and more focused on the indigenous perspective, but it was more focused on the bad white guys who were trying to fuck over.
Right.
And, like, that, to me, I mean, that's still a great film, and it got a lot of people to talk about this event that otherwise people wouldn't have even known about. But it's just interesting that doesn't surprise me, because like I'm saying, Martin Scorsese, it's like I think he's only made a movie from a female's perspective one time in his entire filmography.
Which probably Marty's got some gritty movies, you know.
That's what I'm saying.
Realism is certainly felt in Killers of the Flower Moon. But, you know, one thing that it does illustrate is that, you know, white man bad, you know.
Yeah.
Red man good, obviously, is not, it's not always that simple.
Sure.
Now, if you look at the system.
Or poor and rich either.
Poor and rich. Right. Either.
Sure.
But you look at the system in history of land allocation and takeover and conquering.
Without a doubt.
Cultural genocide.
Colonization.
Yeah, right. You know, it is, the system is in European, Euro-American, that sphere. But in the same time, like, you know, the Sioux were doing the same thing against the Pawnee and the Crow. And like they were
fighting amongst each other even.
Well, right. But they were irredentists. They had a plan to go out and colonize and conquer the territories of the Pawnee.
Wow.
Right. But one of their arguments was, well, if the white men can do it, why can't we?
Mm.
And they're like, well, shit, they're not totally wrong.
Mm.
But, you know, like, you know, there, one of the reasons America was so capable of conquering these tribes, which is what they did in the end, they didn't conquer them as far as killing them off. Like, that's one of the stories that we don't teach, is that, oh, no, there was endurance.
Mm.
And they defied their own destruction. And they remained, and they still remain. Like, that's something we don't look at with these tribes. It's like, oh, no, like, there's tragedy, but they persisted.
Hmm.
And they're still enduring tragedy. There is such a thing as systematic discrimination and repression and trauma.
Hmm.
Like, you don't just... Trauma is spread.
Yeah, no doubt.
You get alcoholism, you get mental health issues, you get a lack of care from the federal government.
Yeah.
You know, like, these things don't just end.
Yeah. And it creates more trauma. People who experience trauma, like you're saying, that, you know, do it to other people or...
Racism is always the easiest answer.
Hmm.
It's always easy to say, oh, black people are necessarily this way, instead of saying, oh, there's a system that is perpetuated by white Americans that they don't experience all the time.
Hmm.
It's easy to say, no, that system doesn't exist.
Yeah.
No, this is, like, it's always a pull yourself up by your bootstraps. It's like, oh, they got bootstraps. They're trying.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, they don't have the same boots as you.
Yeah.
You know, it's always like...
They started the race further ahead.
Right.
Like, we're all maybe starting the race at the same time, but not at the same location, the same starting point.
Right.
You know? So, I agree. Yeah.
You know, and I mean, so, like, with the different tribes and the different history, is it's just easier to say that something was defective with these tribes. You know, like, that they, you know, one of the things in the Boise Valley, where we are, folks, in Boise, Idaho, is that there was these monuments that were the shape of Idaho. And when I worked for the mayor, when I was a member of the Department of Arts and History for the city, we did all this work. And the mayor wanted to talk about these monuments and the history of them. And that the monument from the 30s said, when civilization came to the valley.
Mm.
And that was like, hey, fuck you, man.
Yeah, that is fucked up.
No, it was. There was a civilization. It just wasn't your civilization.
Yeah.
And so the mayor didn't want to put it out in this, like, 2015-16.
Okay.
He didn't want to put it out, like, do this project at the time, because there was all the Confederate monument debate going on down south, right? And so he's like, oh, SPR.
Interesting.
You know, and so that's working for the government as a historian. But that's the idea. White people had, like, oh, we brought civilization, the city on a hill, to you.
Manifest us.
Right. But the Comanche were their own empire. Yeah. Right?
Well, I mean, think about before, what's it called, before Christopher Dipshit Columbus, like, you know, made his landing. There were millions more, weren't there? I mean, didn't we, like, accidentally kill millions of Native Americans just through disease? Like, not even through, you know, when we eventually came, we started colonizing.
Hispaniola.
Yeah, because Spain colonized a lot of it, right? Yeah.
Hispaniola, you land on Hispaniola, and then conquistadors start conquering that island, and they extend like a false friendship kind of thing, and then they start to get in among the population and spread like a violent virus.
Yeah.
And give them liquor, give them booze, give them things they have no tolerance to, spread disease.
Oh,
it's all good, because now the less there are of them, the more desperate they are, the more we can exploit them.
Damn.
And like, that's the thing. Like, I'm not, in America, class has always been defined in line with race and whiteness,
yeah.
You know? And, you know, that's something true to the world, but there is a difference between American style, the racial ladder here, and in other parts of the world.
Hmm.
And, it, you know, in fact, Hitler got his racial stratification from America and eugenics.
Yeah.
You cannot take a black person's skull which has all these nuances. You know, people are different.
Yeah.
And you can't take a white person's skull, who, of course, all white people are different
yeah.
in the shape of their skull, and say, well, okay, so this black person has a larger part of skull here.
Yeah.
So they're naturally this way.
The Django Unchained scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yep, that logic was used.
Yeah. Oh, so this the way this cerebellum area is shaped on the skull, or the
so
cerebellum is
up. Such a crazy
right.
And it's
invented.
Such a thing that people back then, especially with the education people had, would have been like, oh yeah, I believe. Like you could see how people would fucking feed into
the
that.
Negative side of anthropology, man.
It's so messed up.
You know, I mean, bones can only get you so far. But that was also used, like, you know, I'm reading this book on I finished it, but on the first 30 years, 1765 to 1795 and the ratification of the Constitution, and how much slavery was part of that debate, you know. And they're talking about there, you can see them in, you know, before the Constitution is ratified, where they're in all these conventions and they are arguing slavery.
Mm.
And you have Patrick Henry say that, oh, you know, if you say slavery is wrong in the Constitution, well, then they're going to take your N-word, right?
Wow.
And it's like, that's Patrick Henry saying
yeah,
that.
Yeah, wow.
But yet their other side is debating, like, these are men. But even they are like, they're not full men like we are, but they have the capability. That was progressive for that day.
Yeah.
But they're saying, like, if they're given the chance with freedom, they can be what
that is
we...
crazy, like, because wasn't even, like, Lincoln, like, we, again, when we're talking about sugarcoating history and we want to, like, people want to have these idealized images of whether that's, like, our founding fathers or whoever, even, like, Lincoln, and I could be wrong about this, like, he wanted to end slavery, but he didn't even necessarily think that, like, white and black people should assimilate amongst each other.
No, he didn't
even wanted to. He was even partly in favor for what, sending some back to Africa.
Well, right. He changed his views over time, but I know, you know, only to a certain extent, because he's shot and killed, obviously.
Yeah, I didn't have time to.
Right. But he definitely did believe that white and black couldn't mesh together.
Yeah.
And
which is, like, insane now in 2024, but we idolize Abraham Lincoln.
Right.
Love Abraham Lincoln.
And he was, you know, like,
which
you can't cancel him.
Yeah, no, what he did was amazing.
But he's not like, you know, he's not Frederick Douglass.
Sure,
he's not
yeah.
from the population. He's,
true.
You know, but he understood enough to be like, he started to listen.
And that was a necessary step to take, right. Obviously.
But he did think for a long time that it was necessary to, he was like a colonialist, in the sense that we would send, they came from Africa, or their descendants did, so we're going to send these people, these freedmen.
Yep.
Which he wanted to make them, but it was also a shrewd move that he needed the manpower to fight the rest of the war.
Yeah.
You know, so 300,000 some odd, you know, ex-enslaved people.
Yeah, of course they're going to, like, take up arms.
Right. But yeah, that's the point is, you know, Lincoln is a complex figure. He's not all savior, and he's not a demon. You know,
and that's all of history. All of history is complex and
right.
is not just this one simple-sided thing.
Somebody said to me, oh man, it ticked me off. They're like, oh, Martin Luther King, he slept around on his wife, so he's not who he says he is. Like, fuck that. He thinks he's going to die all the time.
Yeah.
He's stressed beyond belief. He's got the whole movement carrying on his back.
Yeah.
You know, and his words impacted millions.
Yeah, and it's like two things can be true. He could be maybe not the best, most loyal husband. That sucks. But it's like, is he not still the greatest civil rights leader who's ever lived?
Well, I mean, some would say no. Like, some would say yes. You know, I mean, it's like some would say with a more militaristic standpoint, or like a black power thing. Like some would say Malcolm X. But even Malcolm X started to, like, move in a different direction, as did Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard to, you can listen to the people that knew him the best, you can read their own words, but you can't ask them.
Yeah.
You know, one thing we don't teach about Martin Luther King is that he said he experienced worse segregation and violence and discrimination in Chicago than he ever did down south.
Wow.
And you could see the system.
Damn.
You could see the system.
I did not know that. Wow.
Right.
Wow.
I think it was Malcolm X who said, like, hey, he respects apartheid South Africa more than America because they claim to be racist and discriminatory and separate.
Wow.
And then they live that way. But he said, in America, you claim ideals that you don't live by.
Damn.
And he was like, you know, it's easy to be like, oh, that guy's anti-American if you're a white person that has had it pretty well.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But what, go, you can't step your shoes into that of a black man,
yeah,
or a black woman living in Harlem,
yeah,
or living in New York or living in Chicago or wherever in America, right? So I guess what I think is when you are an American person, you're a white person in America, and you do not believe what a black person is telling you, that's implicit racism because you are not believing them. Why aren't you believing them?
Mm.
Can you not reach out of your bubble and listen to what they have to say and believe them?
Yeah.
Well, what is it about them that you don't believe? You're probably not willing, you know, the people who believe that way, to say, oh, it's racism.
Yeah.
There's implicit bias for sure.
And what is that? What is it about humans that we just, we want to think that we have, we're on the right, we have the right answers, we're on the right team, and then we don't want to like look beyond that. And that applies to so many things. That applies to whether that's your government or your religion or your race or your own family, your own friend group. I mean, people, we're so tribal, and that we don't want to even like be open to the fact that maybe we're wrong or there's more to like than what we already know.
Well, because you know, for a lot of people, when it comes to American exceptionalism, it challenges their core identity.
Mm.
You know, America has exceptional moments for sure.
Without a doubt.
America has an exceptional doctrine,
yeah,
in the Constitution. And as some historian put it, it was a legal historian talking about the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. He's saying that we haven't always lived up to it. We frequently don't. But yet we have that doctrine,
yeah,
to
always
look at,
strive for.
Right. But you know, also James Baldwin, the great author and activist, black author and black activist, gay man, you know, he said, he's like, until America, and I'm paraphrasing, but he says, until America grapples with the institution of racism and discrimination in America, we'll never be complete.
Yeah.
We'll never be healed. And in fact, right now, when there's so much tension, when there's so much, and a lot of it is racist.
Yeah.
Until we grapple with that, we're never going to be that ideal in reality. We're going to have glimpses of it, but it's also relative.
And sadly, like, how many people like don't want to even grapple with it? Like, there's so many people that don't want to grapple with the truth, or like, even like we were talking about, one of the things we wanted to talk about was like the, you know, just censoring of history. And that's kind of what we're talking about, censoring history and literature. Like, so many people want to sugarcoat, hide it, cover it up. They don't want to just address everything.
Well, right. I mean, in schools, I mean, now I'm talking about when I was in school, and I don't know what you learned, because you're 19 years younger than I am.
Okay.
But what I learned is, you know, you learn about the civil rights movement, but only enough to make you feel positive about the United States.
Mm.
You know, like, so I feel very positively about, you know, let's say the March on Washington,
yeah,
or fighting discrimination down south, and you know.
Which, that's a good point in a way, because that is it, even though it's fucked up that we even had to fight for those things, that is part of the fabric of America, that we overcame a lot of these things.
Right. So it's like, what is America like? I think it's exceptional that John Lewis stood on the Pettus Bridge and Martin Luther King, and they marched into what they knew was, they knew they were going to get their asses beat, but they did it anyway. And they didn't have the satisfaction of punching their detractor back.
Yeah, yeah, true.
And they knew they were going into that without punching back.
Mm.
Now that's fucking courage.
Yeah, straight up.
Right. I find that very positive. I learned a lot from reading and listening to the speeches of Martin Luther King, you know, especially the one he gave the night before he died.
Oh, wow.
I haven't been to the mountaintop.
Oh,
you know,
cool.
But you'll get there. I won't be there, because he knew he was destined, I think, to die.
Yeah.
He didn't know it was going to be the next night. But one of the things he said that night during that speech is he said that he had been stabbed by a black woman 5 years before.
Wow.
And a little white kid sent him a note, and she said to him, he in an interview, he said, had the knife gone in another couple millimeters, I would be dead. The doctor says, don't sneeze, because if you sneeze, you're going to die.
Oh, my God.
And so they were preparing to take out the knife. And the little girl wrote him a note and says, you know, dear Dr. King, I'm so glad you didn't sneeze. And he said he kept that letter with him. And you know what? I've been called a, I, you know, when I did a post about Martin Luther King on Instagram and how much he meant to me because his words changed my life. And he took me outside of my white world in suburban Seattle.
That's awesome.
Which was very white.
Yeah.
And then, you know, with my life in Seattle, working down there and meeting many different populations of people, he changed my life. This man impacted my life. Somebody's like, don't put your white story in the center of this black man's history. I'm like, no. And I referenced that letter. And I'm like, he knew, and he called racism a sickness, a disease. You don't hate the person that's sick. You try to cure them.
Wow. Yeah.
And so he said this little white girl that sent this message was like, man, yeah, like this is something we fight together. It's not fair that black people have to, like, you know, try and teach white people.
Yeah.
Often it's not fair.
Yeah.
And that they have to often be better.
Yeah.
Like we don't, a lot of people don't place the same level of like definitions of humanity on them.
Yeah.
Like there are all these implicit beliefs that we've been taught since America was created.
Hmm.
But America has been exceptional. I just think that is exceptional. I think Martin Luther King, James Baldwin, and them are exceptional.
And that's like what's crazy. How are they separate? Martin Luther King Jr. is America. So is,
right, you know, exactly.
Like all of these things that are negative that we've overcome, or that those people that have stepped up and spoke against it, those are also just as much America as Thomas Jefferson is America.
Right.
I mean, and I don't think most people would even dispute that. I mean, Martin Luther King Jr. is a legend. And I mean, they have, you know, monuments of him in Washington, D.C. But it's like, at the same time, kind of what we're talking about with this podcast, like being history unhinged, right? Like the dark side, like they'll gladly in school growing up tell you how amazing Martin Luther King Jr. is. No one's disputing that. What they're not going to tell you is, oh, and the Memphis Police Department and the FBI like plotted killing him, like you're saying, the day that
you know
he was gonna die. Little did he know, because it's like, you're, that's actually crazy that you, I think it's maybe obvious, but the way you said it, how you were like, he probably always knew he was destined for that, to not live. And it's like pretty amazing. It's almost makes me think of Lincoln in a way too, right? Like the people, or look at like Jesus Christ, right? Like anybody who opposes the system that in that way, they all die. They all become a martyr in some way.
Like, you know? trying to kind of build cohesion and understanding and brotherhood between what we see as disparate peoples is very dangerous.
Mm.
Like you said, I mean, you look at the 20th century, you got Medgar Evers, he's killed down south. Emmett Till, obviously, barely says anything. He wasn't even trying to build anything.
God, what an insane story.
You know, and then you get Malcolm X, you get Martin Luther King, and Bobby Kennedy.
Mm.
I think he's the greatest Kennedy.
Yes.
You know what he did?
Yes.
At first, he didn't. He was with Senator McCarthy, right? Going after communists, you know?
Yeah. Tapped Martin Luther King Jr.
Yeah.
Watching him.
But then he changed.
Mm-hmm.
And he listened to civil rights leaders. James Baldwin and some civil rights leaders got in a room and he would talk to MLK.
Yeah.
MLK died an ally of Bobby Kennedy. Mm. And Bobby Kennedy died of the civil rights movement. And the thing is, but what Bobby Kennedy did from on high, you know, he was as white, well, he's Catholic, but they were as privileged as it came.
Absolutely.
But he listened to people that weren't privileged like him, and he believed them.
Hmm.
And that's what he did. That's the greatest thing that he did, was he went out, he was willing to go out and see these communities in the Mississippi Delta, and then he went out with Cesar Chavez and some of these farm workers in California, Texas, these places, and he saw what they were up against. He saw in reality with his own eye.
Hey there, listeners. Are you tired of driving around in a car that doesn't shine? Let me introduce you to Idaho Express Detail. Established in 2018, this local gem in Boise has been transforming vehicles and leaving them sparkling clean ever since. With a stellar 5-star rating, you know you're getting top-notch service every time. Whether you're in need of a quick wash or a full detailing service, their expert team has got you covered. Located at 515 South Vista Avenue, they're just a hop away from giving your ride the makeover it deserves. And don't forget to follow Idaho Express Detail on Instagram for amazing before and after shots and special promotions. So why wait? Treat your car to the best. Swing by Idaho Express Detail today and see the difference for yourself. Do you struggle with sleep, stress, or mental fatigue?
discover the power of Sarasate, a revolutionary, non-invasive neurotechnology that helps your brain rebalance and reset itself naturally. At Sarasate, they use advanced brain technology to support your brain's own ability to relax, reset, and restore. Their safe, proven approach has helped thousands improve their sleep, reduce stress, and enhance overall well-being. Imagine waking up refreshed with a clear mind and renewed energy. That's the difference Sarasate can make. Whether you're dealing with insomnia, PTSD, or just everyday stress, their personalized sessions can help you find the peace and balance you deserve. Visit Sarasate.com, that's Sarasate.com today, to learn more and schedule your free consultation. You can also reach them at 208-779-1040. Discover the natural way to a healthier, more balanced you.
It's just the cycle of violence just never ends. And people, like, it's like you're saying, people want to answer things with war and with violence. And it's, I don't know how, that goes back to, like, people don't like history. You know, some people, we obviously love history. It was, we fucking talk about it nonstop. But some people, it's like, bores them. They don't want to even think about it. Dude, what the fuck? That's how you learn all these things we're saying.
Right.
That's how you know violence.
You have to have uncomfortable conversations.
If you just don't ignore history, then that's how you go, oh, maybe war is the answer to this problem. And it's like, when has war ever been the answer to the problem? I mean, I will say, I guess, if we want to have a nuanced take, I think there have been wars that were necessary. Like, right, you could say World War II was a necessary
for sure
war, right?
Some,
like,
of it.
But, yeah, but then, sure, again, like, that's, again, not a nuanced thing, because, like, the war overall might have been, like, worth, like, necessary to stop Hitler, to stop the Third Reich, all this. But was it necessary to drop 2 atom bombs on Japan? It doesn't seem like that was necessary at all.
Well, some people say no, because Russia was ready to invade North Japan and we were ready to invade the South. And some would say, but, you know, you also
would have surrendered before that.
But we got Russia right up there with a million man army.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's even after what it took
to get
Nazis.
Yeah.
And then Germany invading. So what did America have? They had the A-bomb.
Yeah, I mean, and it obviously worked. And I mean, here's the thing. I mean,
but I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying they were thinking about the future because they knew the next war that was coming was based on political doctrine and creed and theory and communism versus capitalism and democracy. You know what? And so it's like there's a game being played over Japan that's not just about Japan.
Huh.
You know, and I don't know. I've gone back and forth on that question, but I do know that if you're so shit scared about talking about it because you're afraid of being canceled or you're afraid that, you know, they're going to be mad at you.
Yeah.
That's part of the problem with social media is a lot of people are out there going like, look at me, I'm special. You know, right. It's like, you know what? But some people, and I hope to be that type of person, I think you too, using the platform they have to have real conversations. And if you disagree with me, cool. It doesn't mean I'm an evil demon, you know, that I'm out
and
to get everybody.
We also might be wrong on things sometimes.
Sure, that I'm going to have the conversation.
Yeah, yeah, that's part of it. And then I guess part of the conversation is disagreeing with us, too.
Right.
Like, the conversation doesn't have to be people agreeing.
Well, you know, yeah. And then here's the other thing. I've had Jewish people in my life, very wonderful people. I used to live across the street from when I was growing up. They include me in all their, you know, holidays, and I would eat dinner with them, and I'd wear a yarmulke, and, you know, they would tell me stories, the grandparents would tell me stories about how, you know, they were on the last Kinder transport to leave Europe, you know, and they don't know where their family went.
Wow.
And you know how, you know, you do, you have, their grandchildren are special. Mm. Their grandchildren, one of whom lives in Israel right now, and I hope he's doing okay, my ex, you know, childhood friend, Benjamin, but anyway,
Benjamin Netanyahu was your child.
No. Yeah, right. No, and but one thing is like, you know, man, you realize like each grandchild that the family had was defiance to genocide and the Holocaust.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a big fuck you, Hitler. Hello, we
survived.
We survived. A lot of the genocide worked, unfortunately. Communities are dead over in Poland and Eastern Europe, right? But yet Israel survived. Israel is tremendously important.
Yeah, I agree.
But what it's doing right now, not all of them, many Israelis are against what's happening.
Well,
that's a thing too.
What's happening is hurting Israel.
Right.
People want to frame it like, If you're say anything bad about Netanyahu, you are anti-Semitic.
Right.
And I would argue that saying that this war needs to end and that Netanyahu's bad is pro-Semitic, because you're literally like helping. Like, if you continue this war and continue what they're doing, people are going to hate Israel more and more and more.
Right.
And want to go to war with them more. More Israeli people die. If you promote peace and love and security in the region and you know, cooperation in the region, that's going to make people like Israel more and people want to work with them more. I mean, that everything should be pro-Semitic.
I think the far right in Israel gave in to their anger and rage, and I think they got an excuse to do something that they had wanted to do for a long time. I do think there is a pro-genocide component to the far right in Israel. I don't think that most of them want that, but they're continuing to say, oh, we're going to limit the scope and how many people we kill. And then they don't.
Yeah.
And they know they're killing women and children. They want to.
And the American media seems to cover it less and less every day, too, if we're being honest.
Oh, shit.
Sorry, I'm closing this, actually. Sound for the sound.
But the other truth is that Israel has every right to defend itself and go to war. It's just how you conduct it. And they conducted it poorly.
Yeah.
About as poorly as you could. And I think because a lot of the people in power wanted to. But, you know, Israelis, they don't, it's like me saying, oh, I love Donald Trump. You know, I don't. I didn't vote him into power, but yet he was the president.
Mm-hmm.
I can't control what he does, right? Mm-hmm. They can't control what Netanyahu does to any significant degree. But at the same time, I think the Palestinians, I feel very sad for them. I think they deserve to have a nation. I think I've been treated very kindly in Palestine. I've been to Palestine. I've been to the West Bank. Wonderful people.
Mm.
Totally supportive. You can't be an Israeli and go in there. We had to go past this base made of tires and netting.
Wow.
50 caliber machine guns pointed at the West Bank.
Damn.
But when we got in the West Bank, I treated so politely, fed incredible food. Got to go to Jericho, or, you know, Jesus waited in the wilderness or whatever.
Wow.
Right out there. It was exceptional. I got treated really wonderfully by Jewish people in Israel, too.
Mm.
And I met a lot of them that said, oh, yeah, I have friends that are Palestinian. Like, we work together. We come from different worlds, but we like to be friends. We're not all like you see on TV. Yet there's an intifada wall you can see in the distance separating the two communities.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing easy about any of it. And I think what I drives me crazy about America is you get on the left, you get Palestine, Palestine. And on the right, you get Israel, Israel. And it's like innocence, whether you're Israeli or Palestinian, innocent
humans,
people.
Human beings.
Right.
Right. Because at the end of the day, like you're saying, you were treated good by both, because everybody at the end of the day just wants a roof over their head and a warm meal.
Right.
And to their family to be safe and their loved ones to be safe. There's not much more to it than that.
Dude, Hamas and the military complex in charge of the war on the Israeli side right now,
mm-hmm.
they both gave in to hate.
Yeah.
And you know what? They've seen violence, so I guess I'm not going to judge them on that, but I am going to judge them on what they're doing. Because if you are okay indiscriminately killing thousands of children in Gaza, then there's something very sick with you. I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. But we could go on.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, this has been a really good conversation, yeah. Actually.
But I think the most important thing is, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
We're not always going to be so intense about it, but we thought we'd just jump right in.
Yeah. It might have been a little all over the place, but just in some episodes might be a little more streamlined than this. This was kind of like an introduction episode. We're just kind of getting a feel for it, us two talk. And some episodes might just be like this, where us two are talking.
We'll be a little bit more directed, but this was just like an idea of the stuff we're going to talk about, what we're trying to do. And I think, London, you said, you don't have to agree with us. It's fine.
Yeah.
Don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Whatever. Don't listen to the podcast.
I mean, it's also, whatever. Do listen to it, because even if it's okay.
Or it's good to
listen to people that you disagree with, I think, sometimes.
Chime in against us, whatever.
Yeah.
Speak your piece.
Yeah, talk
just
to
be part
us,
of the
please.
Conversation.
Please be a part of it.
Be part of the conversation. I'm man enough to take it. I'm a big boy.
And if we're wrong about something, point it out.
Yeah, and I'd like to say I'm big enough to, be challenged, and if I see your point, well, okay.
Yeah.
I've done that a few times.
Sure.
But we have some interesting topics coming up. the next time, you know, we have an interview with somebody, our next episode, we're going to be talking about conspiracy theories in Idaho, you know, yeah, Ruby Ridge, but how they're tied to Waco, white separatism and supremacy. You know, we're going to get conspiracy oriented and tie it to the day. But we have a guest joining us. He is my buddy. He's a professor at BSU, the history department, Tim Gill. And yeah, he is an expert in conspiracy theories of other things, you know, other things too.
Sweet.
But yeah, he is. He was a member of my grad cohort there at BSU when we were all in the graduate department of history there. And yeah, it should be a fun conversation. We have lots of interesting things coming your way. Wait, we talked about one person I talked to was about bodybuilding, women bodybuilders.
Mm.
And this idea of feminism.
Mm.
Like, some feminists are like, oh, no, that's demeaning yourself. Mm. They don't feel like that.
Yeah.
Let's mix up. What is feminism? It is relative to who you are as a woman, I suppose. Not being a woman, I don't know specifically.
Sure.
But we'll talk about that. We have a friend who, you know, was a Mormon and left the Mormon church, as if I disclose.
Yeah, before, yeah, right? As well, ex-Mormon. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit, before we go, tell us a little bit about yourself, London.
Okay, so yeah, so my name's London Talbot, and I pretty much lived in Idaho my whole life. I was born in Utah, but I've lived here since I was a kid. And I just have a real intense interest in history ever since I was a kid, and in writing and literature. And, you know, I got my degree in narrative arts at Boise State, my undergrad, and just that's like continued my love for writing. And I took a lot of history classes at Boise State. And, you know, now we started this podcast, and next month I start my master's program at Oregon State. And
they're all about the beaver.
Yeah, the beaver. So we're just
love the beaver, everybody.
But I'm getting my master's at Oregon State in fiction, and working on a Western novel for my thesis. And I'm just like Mark, man. I really love talking about history. I love talking about politics, religion, all these things really interest me. You know, the tough conversations to have, and sometimes like these are the conversations that, you know, spark fights or debates or arguments. But I just think that these are the conversations people need to have. And I think I've always been told by people that I would be good on a podcast because I just
right.
like to talk about that kind of stuff. So I'm glad that I met somebody like Mark that I can, you know, try this out with, and hopefully, you know, everybody likes it and we're a good fit, and we're good when we interview people and stuff. Sometimes it'll be like this, just you and me talking and spitballing, you know.
You know, like for Halloween, one of my dreams has been to talk about Vlad the Impaler.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? The real Dracula.
Real one.
You know, so we'll sit down and we'll talk about the real Vlad Dracula. Dracula is son of the dragon. His father was Vlad Dracul.
Oh, wow.
Which was from the Order of the Dragon. So he was known as
Dracula.
The dragon. Right?
Shit.
And so then he also impaled people. It was a common practice in the Ottoman Empire. Right? And so they were a principality.
Was that
Wallachia.
Romania? Was that Romania?
Now it's Romania.
Okay.
Moldova, Romania. But Vlad Dracula, he was not overseeing Transylvania. He did raids there and killed ethnic Germans there.
Huh.
But he was actually from Wallachia, and so he was the prince of Wallachia.
Mm.
And so he has a whole interesting history. And then Bram Stoker heard about this interesting character, and we get, you know, the Count Dracula.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and so he was actually a prince.
Basically, what year was he around? Like the
1470s.
Yeah, yeah. Andrew Tate from Romania. Andrew, you know Andrew.
Never mind. Oh yeah, yeah. That guy's such a D-bag, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
He's like a kickboxer or something.
Yes, yeah.
I know that guy could fuck me up, but Andrew Tate, you're still a douchebag.
Yeah.
You know what? Rolling this, you know, you'd get some slick sports car, man.
Andrew Tate's a modern day Vlad the Impaler.
Oh no, Vlad's cool.
Yeah, totally. Hailing people's cool.
Does he like Vlad the Impaler?
No, I don't. I'm saying they're both from Romania, I think, is why I was.
You know what?
I think he's from Romania. Who knows? I could be wrong about that.
You're saying impaling's wrong. I'm saying, why are you impaling people?
What's the reason?
You know, right. The reason matters. But anyway, yeah, we're not going to glorify Vlad, but that's just one thing. Who knows what we're going to talk about? But we're going to have all sorts of interesting conversations, and we're not going to shy away from saying our mind and speaking our mind. Me, Mark Iverson, I am the guy that's been on all these other podcast iterations. If you've been listening, I think I finally found my groove here with London. But for those of you who don't know, I speak a little bit more assertively about war crimes and genocide because that's what my education is in, you know, and I did PhD out because, you know, when your wife and children are like, either it's us or your PhD program, it's like, okay, I'll go buy PhD program.
Yeah, yeah.
But I sure did learn a lot, and I can tell you that I know a little bit more than your average Joe, but I'm no expert. I don't think there is such a thing because genocide is a shifting bitch of a monster.
Yeah.
And so you're always trying to figure it out. But I knew this war in Palestine wasn't going to end easily.
Yeah.
I knew, because what's the economic incentive to end it?
Yeah, yeah, true.
What is
There's
it?
None. There's,
right.
The economic incentive is to...
The international community didn't do shit in Rwanda.
Yeah.
What's the incentive? What's the political or the monetary incentive to
There's
do
only
it?
Ethical and moral incentive.
Yes, like and we like to pretend that what drives it. Us.
Yeah, yeah.
We package it that way.
Yeah. Governments don't give a fuck about that.
Right, right, right.
People do.
People do, but yeah, governments are monsters. But, you know, that's what we'll talk about. That's where I come from. And then I started this business, Ida History, which this is tied to. You know, we do this podcast. We're sitting on my GMC motorhome, 1978 Kingsley. I call it the Road Toad. We're offering new tours. You know, we've been retrofitting this thing and trying to fix the fucking AC, which is the most god-awful thing.
So if you see us sweating our asses off.
Because you want to talk about the upper crust. Jeff Bezos, fuck you.
What?
You know what?
What does that have to do with your fucking van?
Because they can't deliver any of my goddamn parts.
Oh, Amazon.
And when I try to get help and try and figure out where my parts for the AC are, you know what I get? Some fucking person in Eastern Europe or Pakistan.
That can't.
Right? Same thing with Facebook. Fuck you too. What's his name? Zuckerberg?
Fuckerbird.
You know what? I get the same thing. I'm talking to a guy, you know, it's a job for them, but they can speak some English.
Sure.
But I can't understand what they're saying.
Yeah.
That's not racist. I just can't understand their English.
Yeah.
And they never quite get to the solution that I need in the problem, right? And so, you know what? That's what happens when things get too big and unorganized and they outsource shit from the United States.
Yeah.
That's what you get.
So anyway. Sign outsource to other countries and shit. Yeah.
But you know what? Jeff Bezos, you're a human too.
Yeah.
So
we could see your side, maybe.
I don't want to make you cry on your supervillain yacht.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll cry on our supervillain 70s van.
I'd like to get a Cybertruck and then run over Elon Musk with it. What do you think?
Oh, man. Musk is an interesting guy.
We won't get
a whole other episode. I like him, but it'll be interesting.
So, anyway, that's what we're going to do. We're going to do interviews on the road to this 1970s. Just beauty of a van, orange shade carpeting, real wood interior. We're going to drink some beer. So today we've been drinking San Juan Island Brewing Company India Pale Ale, the Outer Island India Pale Ale. It's fabulous. I went out there.
Get pretty fast.
I went out there with my 6-year-old son and we camped. So, the two of us got real shit faced together. Just kidding. I could only enjoy this in certain bits, but it was one of my favorite beers. I love San Juan Island Brewing. So that's what we've been drinking today. We're gonna have these conversations. So for beers,
yeah,
we hope to get some local sponsors and beers from
locals,
beer breweries. But that's what we've been doing, and so expect the same thing. And anyway, this is the History Unhinged podcast.
I think that's the working title right now. We think it's History Unhinged. That's probably the title we're rolling with. But we've been having a pretty hard time coming up with a title, so.
Yeah, I wanted to do it like...
Help us come up with a title.
Two Pricks on a Van.
But, History and Shit was another
History
one.
And Shit.
Maybe we don't want it to have history in the title. We talk a lot about history, so it just feels like it's only natural to...
The Shit Show.
Yeah, the Shit Show.
Dirty History.
It is what it is.
I don't know.
The Shit Show might work.
The Shit Show.
The Shit Show.
Folks, right now it's History Unhinged. We'll see where it goes, but thanks for listening. I am Mark Iverson.
And I'm London Talbot.
Namaste.
Thanks, guys.